All right, at this point I'm supposed to briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meetings are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscious meeting. And I meet all those requirements. I'm really grateful that I've had the opportunity to chair this meeting on Saturday night. It's been a really great experience. And I would recommend for you to come to a Central business meeting, become a member, and to chair. It's a really great experience. And I've really enjoyed getting the speakers. I love the doctor's opinion. I mean, that was me to a T. I never realized, you know, how allergic I am to alcohol. And I was always restless, irritable, and discontent. And through this program, the 12 steps, the fellowship of AA, and guidance of a sponsor, I've been able to stay sober one day at a time. And I have a wonderful, fabulous life today, and I'm very grateful. And thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. Thank you. At this time, I'd like to introduce my speaker. Oh, a reminder, the group has asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And at this point, I'd like to introduce my speaker, which is Jorge. And I wanted to ask Jorge to share tonight his story, his experience, strength, and hope, because I know that Jorge has had some adversity in his sobriety, and he was able to remain sober through that, a feat that I was not able to do. And so I like to hear that. Also, Jorge is very involved here at Central and in the program, and I see him doing the deal and helping newcomers and attending meetings regularly. And, you know, he's, in my eyes, this is my opinion, he's a winner. So I'm very anxious to hear his story, and I don't want to take up too much time with my gibberish. So here's Jorge.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jorge. I am an alcoholic. Well, nothing better to do on a Saturday night than to come to Central and talk to a bunch of drunks. You know? I am from Mexico City. I was born December 15, 1959. And, you know, one day I was reading my birth certificate, and where it says place of birth, it had my grandparents' address. So I questioned my mother, you know, I said, why do you have my grandparents' address? And she said, because you were born in the house. That's where you were born. And I said, man, you know, I thought I had been born in a hospital just like normal people, you know. Maybe that's a reason why I came out the way I am. Just a bunch of excuses, you know. Well, you know, I'm going to give you my, you know, experience, strength, and hope. And I'll try to be brief, you know. And I know that I won't be able to, you know, if there's real alcoholics here and they're still not convinced, I probably won't be able to convince you. I know that alcohol is the only one that's going to convince you. You know, John Barleycorn. You know, that's what the book calls it. In my case, a little bit different, you know. Jose Cuervo is the one that kicked my ass. But it doesn't matter. They're distant cousins, believe me. So, you know, I come from a big family, you know, on both sides, you know, my mother and my father. And what I remember the most is we were always together, you know, always vacationing together, partying together. We even lived together, you know. We lived with my great grandfather built a 6-story building right next to his house, and that's where all the family lived. My grandmother, my uncles, my you know, cousins, and my great-grandparents in the house next door. And so there was always a lot of people around. And, you know, on my father's side, he was kind of the youngest. And, of course, you know, all my cousins were like, they could have been my uncles, you know. They could have been my, you know, older brothers or something like that. And on my mother's side, it was just the opposite. She was kind of the oldest, and my uncles could have been my, you know, my brothers too, or my cousins. You know, I was one of the, even though I come from a, you know, family of four, and I'm the oldest one. I was the youngest, and you know, when I was hanging out with all my cousins. And I remember very clearly, you know, that I don't know if some of you men relate to this, but I wanted to be a man. You know, and I was a little kid, but I wanted to be a man. You know, and I don't know if that's, you know, why we alcoholics think like that, you know, something. We cannot be in the present. We're either in the past or the future. We cannot even enjoy our present time, you know, as a child, you know. But I wanted to be a man. And so I wanted to do what I thought men were doing. You know, and I was hanging out with my cousins and my uncles. And I remember that the day came when, you know, I was about 13 years old, when I was offered a drink. You know, I used to race motorcycles, and I had, you know, my motocross. And I remember after a practice, one of my cousins handed me a drink. And I took it, you know. That's what they were doing, you know. So I wanted to be a man. I said, well, if that's what you got to do, do it. And I remember taking that drink. It wasn't that good, you know. I mean, I got to be honest. I really didn't like it. I got drunk very quickly, you know, and I couldn't function. I remember puking all over the place, you know, and I said, I won't do this no more, really, you know. But being a potential alcoholic, I guess, you know, we try something else, and I did, you know. I said, well, shit, you know, maybe I'm not supposed to be drinking liquor this, you know, right now. Maybe a beer, you know. Let me try some beer. And I remember that I started drinking beer, and of course that's how I built up my tolerance towards alcohol. You know, that's the way it happened to me. You know, I'm not a blackout drunk. You know, I remember everything I did, and I remember building up tolerance towards alcohol by drinking beer. And I remember, you know, one time I was probably like 13, 14 years old, and I was hanging out with my cousins, my uncles, and we were in Acapulco, you know. And I remember that they're older than me, and they want to go out, and they took me with them, you know, and they wanted to go into the discos, you know, and at that time the discos was a big deal, you know. But of course I cannot go inside the discos because I'm a kid, you know. I'm 14 years old. I don't have an ID. They don't want to let me in. So I'm pretty much spoiling their night. And they said to me, Jorge, why don't you don't worry about it, you know. We'll find something to do, you know. So I'm drinking with them, and they'll say, one of them came up with a bright idea to take me to, you know, to the red district of Acapulco, you know. And I said, shit, you know, I don't know if I want to go out, you know? And I'm fearful, you know. I am a secondary school student, you know, and I've learned a lot about history and math and geography, but none of my teachers has ever taught me how to make love, you know, or, you know, have sex. So I said, okay, you know, whatever. Yeah, I want to be a man. Let's go. So they take me there, and of course, while I'm there, you know, I'm still drinking, you know, that's what's giving me the courage. I'm full of fear. I don't know what to do, you know, I have an idea, but, you know, I don't know what the hell is going to happen. And I remember, well, I'm in there, you know, I see all the ladies there, and big mouth, one of my cousins, you know, he's like, well, we got a newbie over here, you know. And of course some of the ladies are going like, well, come over here, we'll give you a discount, you know. And I'm like, I still wonder what the discount would have been, you know. I only paid $2. So, you know, I was on my way to become a man, you know, according to me. And of course, that's what I thought I had to do, you know. And of course, you know, now I'm drinking. I'm going to Borbello's. And the only thing missing is I have to end up in jail, you know. Really, that's what men do. That's what I thought I had to do. And I remember I was in the United States, you know. I've been coming to the United States legally for since I was 9 years old, you know. And so I was studying in the state of Kansas, and I was going to high school there. And I remember that my parents went to visit me, you know, and they came with my uncles. And one night, you know, we were in downtown Kansas City, and we borrowed the car, you know, the rental car. And of course my father said no drinking, none of that stuff. But of course, you know, we had other plans. And so we started drinking. And I remember that on my avenue, probably like this one, you know, one of my uncle, the one that was driving, he wanted to take a leak, you know. So I said, well, why don't you just pull over, you know, I'll go out there, you see where the bushes are. I'll go around the block, you know, and I'll pick you up. Great idea. Then you think, okay. I don't know if the police were already behind me. But they pulled me over, you know. And, of course, I'm 14 years old. I don't have a driver's license, you know. I'm drunk. So that's the first time that, you know, I had to do a field sobriety test. And I failed. They took me to jail. I did the breathalyzer. I failed. So they put me in jail, you know. I spent like 4 hours in there. My parents had to bail me out. And they were very upset with me, you know. But that's where I was heading, you know. I'm 14 years old. And I'm already, you know, in jail. Now, every time, you know, that I drank, I didn't do stupid things, but, you know, I was able to, at this time, you know, stay away from it. And then, you know, there'll be the times when I would get crazy and do stupid things. And I remember that I went back to Mexico, and I was finishing my prep school there. And my father gave me a car, you know. I was doing good at the time. And one night, you know, coming from school, as I was parking the car in the garage of this big building, I started a fight with one of the servants, and my grandmother heard me. She came downstairs, you know, and she asked me, you know, what the problem was. And of course, I'm drunk, and I don't know what to do, you know. I don't even want to be there. And I remember that I told her, I said, well, nobody loves me here, you know. I'm getting out of here. I'm going someplace else, you know. I'm going to continue partying. And I remember that I get in my car, and I forgot to close the driver's door. So when I backed up, I hate my grandmother. I ran over. And, you know, I looked and she's on the ground, you know. And by now, you know, everybody has heard the commotion downstairs. My uncles are downstairs, my parents are downstairs, and they want to beat the crap out of me, you know. And I don't know how my grandmother got up and defended me. She got in between them, you know, and defended me. And I remember going to bed that night and feeling like crap. You know, I remember the next morning, the horror, you know, just like what the book talks about. The despair, you know, the guilt, the remorse. And I remember going downstairs and apologizing to my grandma and asking for forgiveness. And she did forgive me. She told me, you know, I forgave you last night, you know, but you got to moderate your drinking. And I remember that I said, I promise you I won't drink again. But we know what the book says, you know, that day came again, you know, when I drank. But at this time, you know, I'm in deep trouble. You know, for the first time, they think there's something wrong with me. So, you know, they send me to see my godfather, who happened to be the family doctor. And he checked me out, you know, and he gave me, you know, a few suggestions, and he did a lot of writing, you know, and I had to tell him the truth, you know. For the first time, I was telling somebody. So before I, you know, I also like the doctor's opinion, but this was my first doctor's opinion, you know. And he told me, he said, Jorge, son, you know, I have two suggestions for you. You know, the first one is, I want you to go see the movie Clockwork Orange, you know? Which I thought it was a good idea, no? You know? I mean, and the other one is that I said, you need to be circumcised, you know? And I said, you know what? I'm 18 years old, you know? How the hell do you want me to be circumcised right now, you know? He's like, yeah, you need to be circumcised. So I have no other choice but to be obedient. You know, because I've been disobedient all my entire life. And so I said, okay, well, schedule up the, you know, surgery or whatever. I'm pissed off, you know, of course. I'm pissed all this time. And I showed up, walked in and walked out, you know. Gave me a bunch of pills. I remember. I'll never forget that. And, you know, I was being obedient, you know, I was following directions, and I remember that a friend of mine called me, you know, like in the middle of the week. He said, Jorge, my girlfriend's cousin is coming from out of town. She's hot. Do you want to go out with us? And I said, yeah, of course, you know. So I wanted to drink, you know, and I wanted to have fun. So I remember saying, man, my doctor warned me that I cannot drink with taking this, you know, while I'm taking these pills. What do I do? Well, stop taking the damn pills, you know. So I go out with them, you know, and I'm having a good time. We're on our, you know, I had a few beers, and I'm on my way back to my house, you know. And I'm in the back seat of this Volkswagen Beetle, you know. And now all of a sudden I have this, you know, and I'm making out with this girl, you know, and all of a sudden I have the most painful erection of my life, you know. And again, you know, then disobedience, you know. I remember that, you know, a few days later I went to see the doctor, so he will remove the stitches, you know, and he's like, son, you're missing a lot of them, what have you? The doc, you don't want to know. You know, I'm going to tell you how I came to AA. think that qualifies me as a real alcoholic. But, you know, I came here in 1990. Came to the United States, you know, and I came here. I am, you know, as I said, you know, I'm not an illegal alien. I'm not a, you know, wetback, you know. I probably have a lot more Native American Indian blood in me than a lot of U.S. citizens, you know, but that doesn't qualify me as a U.S. citizen. And I came here with the person that was going to be my wife. I had met her on a flight from Tampa Bay to Mexico City. I was a flight attendant at the time. And so we decided to come here, you know, live here. And I remember I came here, you know. And I came here with good intentions, believe me. You know, I was going to marry her, have a family, you know, work, and do the right thing. And I was behaving, and, you know, I got married like 3 months after I came here. And I remember that I was at the end of my drinking career, you know, I just didn't know that. And I remember that going to Epcot Center, you know, on my honeymoon. And Epcot Center, I've never been there. Nice place. And as I'm having a good time with my new wife, you know, I got to the pavilion section, you know, where you, all the pavilions are, and you go around the pavilion. Go around and go to every pavilion. And I came up with a bright idea, you know, right there. I said, I bet you I can have a drink in every single country here, you know, and go around the world. That way I've tasted everything, you know, from around the world. And I guess only a potential alcoholic from Mexico will start with Mexico, you know. And I did. I started my experiment with Mexico, you know. I had a few beers there, and then I moved on to Norway, I remember, and I did the right deal, and I had a beer, and then I moved to China, and, you know, I had a good time there, and I had a beer, and then I got to Germany. And boy, let me tell you, I have a big selection of beer. And the bottom line is that I never made it past Germany. I got drunk there, you know. And I remember, you know, going home and thinking, well, you know, what the hell? I live here now. You know, I can go to Epcot anytime I want. You know, my parents and my family parents, or, you know, my relatives are going to come and visit, and probably I'll have more opportunities to go to Epcot. And I did. I had a lot of opportunities to go to Epcot. And every time I got to that pavilion section, that bright idea came to me. And I was, again, trying my experiment. And every single time, I never made it past Germany. Soon after that, you know, my wife had enough of me. And I remember that it took about a month of drinking until finally I was pulled over and for drinking and driving. And I was taken into custody. And while I was into custody, I was not a nice person. I did not cooperate with the police, and I started a fight. So I didn't go anywhere but to 33rd Street. And the next day, I was charged with DUI and a battery on a police officer. So I'm in a lot of trouble. Yeah. I remember that as soon as I got out of there, I found a Spanish-speaking group of AA right around the corner from where I am. And I went there. And I'll never forget the people that were there, you know. They greeted me. They welcomed me. And I cannot tell you that, you know, from the very beginning I followed every single suggestion, because that's not true. But I can tell you that I knew I had a drinking problem. I had had that moment of clarity in jail where, you know, I thought about my family, my parents, and all the education that they've given me, and here I am, you know, in jail, far away from home, and they don't even know where I am. So I remember coming here, and I was willing to do the deal. I don't think I was very open-minded, and about honesty, I didn't know anything. But that was the first thing I practiced, honesty, about not picking up that first drink and coming to a meeting every day. And as I was coming, you know, the alcoholics that welcomed me also gained my confidence, and they became my friends. And very soon, you know, they started telling me about their escapades, and they were telling me what they were doing and that they were not doing that anymore, and that they have changed because of what they've worked here, you know, because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they could see in my face, you know, that I was very unhappy, that I was very angry. You know, I was a violent drunk. And they said, no, you know, we can help you. If you tell us what's wrong with you, you know, we can help you. And I did. I didn't know what I was doing at the time, but I was doing fifth step, you know. And that made me a relief. That gave me a relief that I've never had before. And that's what I like about AA. And that's why I kept coming back, you know. And I didn't want to ask for a sponsor, because I don't know about you, but, you know, those reservations, those ideas, you know, I don't need that. I can do this on my own. But that it doesn't work. You know, I can see it here all the time. I'm just grateful that I didn't go out. You know, 9 months into the deal, I was asking for help. And finally, I got myself a sponsor, you know. And this person helped me. And I, you know, I was able to finish the process. That, you know, that it's required for me to have this psychic change. And so I had this spiritual awakening, you know, and I was able to make amends to my family. I went, you know, after I was released from probation, you know, I drove all the way to Mexico City and made amends to my immediate family. You know, I continued to work the program to the best of my ability. I can tell you that something was missing, you know, and what was missing was my contact with my higher power. You know, I knew something was wrong, because at one point I questioned this program. I said, this is sobriety, I don't like it, it sucks, you know. And but fortunately for me, I didn't go out. You know, I didn't leave. I just asked for help. And somebody helped me. And somebody noticed that I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. You know, I didn't, you know, set time aside for prayer and meditation. And as soon as I started doing that, things changed. You know, things changed in my life changed. And a lot of good things happened to me. You know, sometimes I joke around and I say, you know, and I was on that pink cloud for many years until, you know, God came, took it away from me and gave it to a newcomer, you know, because then. But that, the truth is that I can always take my will back, you know, and that's what I did, you know, in sobriety, after many years, you know, doing the deal, I said, you know what? Let me take my finances and my sex life back, and you take the rest, you know. And of course, I got myself into a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble, you know. I thought that, you know, I've always wanted to have a business. I didn't pray about it. And today I can see that it was Jorge's will, not God's will, what I was doing. But it, you know, I did it anyway. You know, and I've never worked so hard in my life than, you know, during those years that I had business that it was not successful. Of course, you know, the economy didn't help. But, you know, I got myself into a lot of trouble, and, you know, I lost my house, one of my houses, a town hall, you know, my business, of course, you know, my nice car, you know, my 401k lost its K also. So all of a sudden, you know, I feel like crap. And then, on the other hand, you know, I'm doing things that I'm being dishonest, you know. And I'm moving away from the principles of the program. And I remember that I felt like a newcomer, but I asked for help again, and my sponsor helped me. After I had disobeyed him, this time, you know, I paid the price, and I asked for help, and he helped me. And I did another fourth step, and, you know, fifth step, and I clean house. And I think that the most important thing that I did was, one day, you know, I was got on my knees, and I asked God for forgiveness. But not only that, you know, I asked Him to remove my disobedient heart and replace it with an obedient one. He did that. You know, I'm here to tell you that He did that. You know, it's kind of a weird story, and maybe some other day I'll tell you about it, but He did that, you know, because after it happened, I felt like I didn't want to disobey my parents no more. And since I don't have a earthly father no more, I don't want to disobey my heavenly father no more, and my mother. And that's what I've been doing, you know. And last year, you know, as you all remember, through prayer, I finally calm myself. I started doing what I was supposed to be doing. You know, I got involved again, once again, with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started chairing. I started, you know, I took some service work. I got some sponsees, and things changed. You know, and I knew that my conscious contact with God was not right. You know, it was not right. And last year, you know, the first thing that happened is my brother got very sick, and he ended up in the hospital. He almost died, you know, and they didn't even know what the hell was wrong with him. All I know is that all he could move were his eyes. You know, he was totally paralyzed. And I remember that I prayed about that. You know, there was nothing I can do. And then, about this time, you know, a year ago, I was in prison. You know, the ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, came to my house and picked me up, you know. And not because I'm an illegal alien, okay? But because what I had done 17 years ago, because of the battery on a police officer, they wanted to send me back to Mexico. So they took me to Chrome facility, Homestead, and I remember I was full of fear, you know. But then I said, "Well, God is going to take care of you, Jorge. He's been taking care of you all these years. You know, why is he going to leave you alone today?" And I remember I spent 7 days in that place. And I attended every single religious service that they had. I talked to a lot of people in there. And finally I was released. You know, my brother-in-law, who most of you know, he's an attorney, and he became my attorney. And I came out of that place, you know. My mother got sick also, and she had to go through, you know, kidney surgery not long ago, and I was able to help, you know, financially, you know, so she would have her surgery, and she's doing good now, you know. And what has happened, you know, my brother has recovered fully also. He's almost 100% recovered. And you all know what, you know, what's happened to me. You know, after being in this process of deportation, you know, my attorney got busy, you know, and did some things that, you know, he had to do. You know, he's helped me set aside the felony that I had. And finally, you know, I went to see the immigration judge. And they didn't have anything against me no more, you know. So they dismissed the whole thing, you know. So they're no longer sending me back to Mexico, you know. Last week, I got a letter from the Homeland Security, you know, telling me that they're going to give me my green card back. And you know, I think that God has a very good sense of humor, because they're going to give me my green card back on Cinco de Mayo. I wish I could hire a mariachi band, and I would serenade you all here. But I know that the neighbors will complain. So, as you can see, you know, what has happened to me is that today I trust God. I not only believe in God, but I trust God and I rely on God. And that's what I didn't do before, you know. And that's what this program has given me, that sixth sense that it talks about. I didn't have that for the longest, and yet I was still coming. But I didn't have it. I didn't have it. I didn't have it. And now that I have it, I don't want to let it go. Really. You know? And today I enjoy coming here. Today I have a good time in AA. You know, I like to do service work. I have friends here. You know, I will not change this for anything in the world. You know, I was a disobedient human being, you know. And today I'm not. I'm going to close with a reading that I like a lot. This is from 12 and 12, and it says, unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps to recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. His drunkenness and these solutions are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They result from his personal disobedience to spiritual principles. And you know what? For the longest time, I thought that God was the one that punished me, you know, for a lot of things. And after reading this over and over and over, finally, I got it. I know what punishes me. What punishes me is disobedience. That's what punishes me. Not God. You know, God is being good to me. You know, I was saying the other day that all those foxhole prayers never worked. They never worked, you know. They never worked. And you know why they didn't work? Because God was busy taking care of his regular customers. That's the bottom line, you know. So I really thank you, Trish, for allowing me to have, you know, be of service tonight. And I'm sure I'll see you around. Thank you.